You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody, Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel on this fantastic voyage. And I'm joined by my first mate, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem to win a national championship at the same school. There have been other father and son NCAA champions, Henry Bibby and Mike Bibby, Don May and Scott May,
Bill Walton
and Luke Walton. Seems like I'm leaving somebody else out. If they spring to mind, I'll bring them up. But for the only two that have won a championship at the same school, we are really excited to be joined by Justin Garcia. Welcome, Justin, to this fantastic voyage to Here District. Justin is the radio analyst for the Bucks Network, Bucks Radio Network, along with Dave Kane, who's been on our show. They do an outstanding job. And Justin also hosts Locked On Bucks, which I understand Chris is our competition. Is it? Do we have competition out there like that, man?
No, they're our friends. Friends of the program.
What's up, Justin, man? How you doing, man?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing good, man. The radio portion, are you doing just home games? Do you travel a bit with the team? How does that work out?
I don't travel. I do all games. The home games, I do the analyst work, and I still do the pregame, postgame, halftime. Road games, it's just those parts. And Dave has to fly solo, and you know how needy he is. That can always be quite an experience.
Man, I don't know. I work with Dave, Justin. He talks an awful lot, man. He talks on TV like he's on radio, man. And, you know,
you have no idea. Imagine those conversations off the air.
Dang, Dave catching strays. Dave catching like, strays.
Let me in, please, man. But anyway, no, Dave is excellent in the work that he does for the Bucks Radio Network. So, man, let's just jump right into it, man. Just so proud of this team, the way they've kind of righted the ship on this fantastic voyage, excuse the pun, but... But I mean, for a while there, man, it was Justin, you know, and it's the funny part, Justin. So when everybody had pegged the Bucks, not everybody, but a lot of pundits at the start of the season had pegged the Bucks to be a play-in team, I thought that was the most asinine, absurdly off mark prediction that I had heard. But then all of a sudden we start out, 2-8 or whatever it is. And I'm like, man, please be a playoff team. Please be a play-in team. Just get into the playoffs. But just quickly, your take on how this thing started off and your feelings about this team initially.
Well, I am right there with you. When I saw a few of the outlets have them as a 7 seed, you just thought, like, there's no way this team is going to be a 7 seed. All the reasons for optimism coming in when we said Doc basically had a chance to audit the class last year and built up that relationship with Giannis and Dame, more structure for the young guys. And there was just so much change last year on and off the court for a lot of these guys. But you think about 3 head coaches in a calendar year that you're dealing with, all these moving parts and how you're changing, how you play offensively and changing your identity, that it just all signs pointed towards the time off, training camp, which Doc continually preached, another year with Doc Rivers and that familiarity, like they're going to be much improved. And I think we saw that opening night in Philadelphia when every single player contributed and I thought played a pretty good game against the 76ers. And then all of a sudden came the losing streak and you just started to wonder, well, what's going on here? The defense was a big part of it. But it just didn't look, and that was the most jarring part, was everything fell into place opening night. None of it did after that. But I kept coming back to, I truly believe this defense is going to be much improved than it was a season ago. And it's not to, take down individuals, but all 3 of the guys they brought in on veteran minimums in the offseason, those were upgrades, at least defensively, a few of them offensively as well from their predecessors. We didn't anticipate quite the impact that you were starting to get from Andre Jackson Jr. and even AJ Green. And that's one of the other things too, of how much of, their, I hate to call it a breakout, but just increased usage in minutes How much of that has to do with the 1-6 start, eventually 2-8 start? How much of it has to do with injuries or other opportunities opening up the playing time? I don't know. Only Doc Rivers knows that. But the important part is that's what we've started to see. And I think it really starts on the defense, that it's looking much closer to what you envisioned of an improved defense with this group. I know in November they're a top 10 defense, and it's not just the overall numbers. They've been pretty good in transition. They're still giving up a lot of those opportunities, but when they get back, they're defending there. And, you know, it just feels like Doc said this quite a bit early in the season. We don't know what our identity is. We heard him say it last year. Right. And when you find it, you know what it is. I think we've found it, that this is a team, maybe not what it was under Bud, but this feels like a defensive team that now has closers and the right mix of offense to get the job done.
Yeah. And so you talk about identity and, you know, trying to establish that. And one of the things that new defensive coordinator Greg Buckner talked about was that it was going to take some time, you know, because of stylistically things being different, schematically things being different with this team. The way they are trying to funnel ball handlers more toward Brooke and Giannis to contest or block or do whatever they're going to do inside, and the activity. I mean, I just been watching the activity. It's more cohesive. It's more five guys on a string. It's more guys rotating in some synchronicity as to where earlier in the season they weren't. It was a lot of hey. Hey, you know, finger point, a lot of shrugging, you know, a lot of looking at the bench, you know, and that's from everybody on down, Brooke and Dame and everybody on down. And now it just seems like they're starting to grasp, as you mentioned, the defensive principles that Greg Buckner, who I mentioned this time and time again, but in Cleveland in the last 3 years, they were 3-6-3 or something in terms of overall defensive rating, and have a similar type of template as the Bucks in terms of Mobley and Allen, two bigs inside, you know, so it's different, but it's some similarities there. And so, man, you know, and I thought a big adjustment to Chris and Justin, and this was a foregone conclusion just because Gary Trent Jr., because of the back, whatever was going on, he was shooting 23, 24, very un-Gary Trent-like shooting. Yeah. And so you sit him down, now all of a sudden you put either Andre Jackson Jr., A.J. Green, in the rotation more. You get a little bit younger, a little bit more active. And, you know, and I think, you know, it's almost a perfect storm of bad crap happening. And I don't think it's even that much of a negative, as long as you get the ship righted.
Yeah.
Get the ship righted. The ship. S-H-I-P. The ship righted. Get your ship together. As long as you get your ship together, that is not a bad thing. This is what you guys comment on. It's not a bad thing to struggle out of the gate and to have to find that sense of urgency. I don't think these guys had it. I think, you know.
Yeah.
Desperation wise. Go ahead, Chris.
No. But to your point, it's like almost like the 2-8 start was a wake up call for everybody. Everybody realized they weren't doing their job. Dudes started feeling the pressure. I mean, remember that wave of just national media absolutely dragging the Bucks during that 2-8 start? That had to weigh on guys. Guys had to start, you know, looking at themselves in the mirror, in my opinion, Justin. But I get back to Ajax and A.J. Green. Okay, A.J., as far as on the defensive side, when you take out a Gary Trent and you minimize his minutes because of the shooting struggles, and then you infuse that rotation with young, athletic energy that's going to be contagious, do you think that evolution of Ajax and A.J. Green, was that the biggest difference in the Bucks that you've seen in these last 10 games or so, or nine, yeah, 8 or 9 games?
Yeah, I was, we were actually talking about it, I think, after the Pacers game in the NBA Cup play, Dave Kane and I, in that Giannis has been at his best, right? Like, you think about the efficiency last year, and Giannis has been incredible once again this year, offensively, but especially defensively. But if we remove him from the conversation, I think AJ Green has been the most instrumental in all of this because of his two-way play, because of his shooting. And you think back to early in the season too, when the Bucks, I mean, their shooting numbers were horrendous. And you looked at it and you saw, well, AJ Green and Torian Prince are both shooting 50% on threes, and yet the cumulative shooting percentages are in the low 30s or 20s for this group. Yeah. So that just really shows you how deep the struggles were. Right. But I think just what he's done, you know, it's not a great comp, but in some ways it's starting to remind you of Sam Hauser, because I know I was guilty of it too, that you see Sam Hauser and you think, well, this is the guy that we can target and pick on defensively. He's out there because he can shoot. But we've seen Sam Hauser hold up defensively the last few years with the Celtics. And Doc, you know, basically said this last year too, when we started to see AJ find his spot in the rotation, that he's tough. He's a coach's kid. He doesn't beat himself. He moves his feet well. Like, you really got to work to beat him defensively. And I think the shooting is obviously going to open the door for him. The defense is what's going to keep him on the floor. And you know, we've seen individual outbursts from him on the defensive end. Andre, too, you know, what he's done, not to minimize that. Sure. I think Doc deserves a lot of credit for going to that. Obviously, Gary Trent struggles. DeLon Wright, too, his struggles early in the season opened the door and created those opportunities. But I think it's been the injection of youth and, you know, Doc and his staff, too, that they've done a good job of riding the hot hand and finding that right mix of maybe tonight's not a 20-plus minutes for Bobby night. Maybe tonight isn't the spot where we play Ajax. And I go back to that more than anything. We've seen, and you guys have probably experienced this too, a lot of coaches will look at a player like Andre Jackson Jr. and say,
can't play him.
The offense, yeah, it's just going to be too much to overcome, so I don't think I can play him. Doc hasn't done that. He's found the right spots for him. When some of that does start to bubble up, then it's inevitable. Okay, sure, we can only play him 7 or 8 minutes today, but I'm not just not playing you because of that.
How much credit do you give Brooke Lopez for the transformation on defense? Brooke has been outstanding in terms of rim protection, but something I noticed after that slow start, that dismal start, guys like Brooke, guys like Giannis, Bobby, the bigs, started playing with more of a sense of urgency as far as covering shooters, rotating, getting out there as well. How much credit do you give Brooke for this defensive transformation?
I mean, I give him a ton, and I think we go through phases, Bucks fans do, where you're all in on Brooke Lopez, and then they start to leave, and then they slowly come back.
Get him out of here! What is that? 36-year-old.
They are going to miss him dearly when he's gone, because I think you take his consistency for granted a lot, you know, not just in his play, but the fact that the guy's out there every single night. And this, for a guy in his mid-30s coming off of back surgery a couple of years ago, is even more remarkable. His steals, too, he's been very active with his hands this season, almost some of the things we thought we were going to see last year with that defensive scheme. But I think it just shows you the importance to the system as a whole. It can't just be one guy or two guys. And I think that's a lot of what we've seen with this group. You know, they've minimized the liabilities on the floor. Where last year at any given time, you had two or three that, you know, opposing offenses felt like we can go here. You're not going to overcome that. You know, you're not going to have enough help. You're not going to be able to rotate enough when that's the case. So they've really minimized that. And really, depending on the lineup, they don't even have those limitations at times on the floor this year. But Brooke Lopez, especially last year, I think it just highlighted the importance of the surrounding cast around him, because his entire time in a Bucks uniform, you think about those schemes that Bud ran, you always had help at the nail. So there was always that assistance there. Giannis was always coming over as the weak side. But it started, and we'll talk a lot about Drew Holiday, rightfully so. You had Eric Bledsoe, too. It started with the point of attack where you were really funneling that off and pushing it into Brooke Lopez. The contests, I think, were about the same last year, but they were different contests. It wasn't by design. It was because, oh, no, we got beat at the point of attack again, and Brooke Lopez has to come over and clean that up. So I do think he's been better this year, but I think he's been consistent his, you know, entire time throughout. It looks a lot better when he has help on the perimeter.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff to talk about, but, man, we can't keep talking about the Bucks without mentioning just the kind of season that Giannis is having so far. And he has just been nothing short of spectacular. He was the player of the week, right? week. Yep. Player of the week for the conference, and rightfully so. But the huge numbers that he's put up, man, the consistency that he has shown, the leadership, you know, the just how vocal. You know, sometimes he'll sit in Doc's in Doc's seat during a timeout in the huddle, and he's going through some. And yeah, and 7-8 years ago when I first got here 10 years ago, you'd never see that happen. He would his whole thing 3 or 4 years ago. Sometimes this year would be to, you know, sit off to the side on the scores table just to collect his thoughts and get himself together. Now he is immersed into the fray. He's talking to guys. He's pointing things out. So just talking about Giannis, man, just in terms of what you've seen, it just bugs me that his name is starting to, but it's not mentioned more in the MVP conversation, especially. And I understand it. This team dug a serious hole for themselves.
Yeah.
But in terms of digging themselves out, he's been the guy with the big shovel.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if this team finishes in the top three after the start and how everybody left them for dead and he continues to play like this, his name is certainly going to reemerge in that. But
did he do this on purpose? Was this by design?
this was all by design.
I'll be sure to get some consideration. Let's start off like crappy and then I'll turn this thing around. But no, go ahead.
I think it was very telling too, about a week ago when Doc was talking about Giannis. I don't think the question was bluntly asked about compare yourself to the 76ers, but you could read between the lines of, hey, these are two teams that did not get off to the starts they envisioned. It seems like one is headed in the right direction and the other isn't. So, Doc, why do you think that is? And he talked about Giannis's leadership and mentioned some things that you did, Marcus, that for the longest time, Giannis was always the lead by example type. And, you know, it's tough to not get that when you see the work that he puts in, how driven he is. That can resonate with guys. But Doc's point was, look, we still don't have Chris. We're introducing some young guys into the mix. Things haven't gone as we expected so far this year. That's a big part of it, too. I need you to be more of a vocal leader. And I don't think you can solely attribute that to what we've seen from Andre and AJ and even Ryan Rollins. But I think that's certainly helpful that you see the demeanor that this guy brings, the work ethic that he puts in. And now he's out there essentially coaching on the floor too and sharing that input and not just look at what I'm doing, try to do the same. Here's some things to look for. We've seen, you know, multiple times Andre Jackson Jr. when you'll see moments on the floor. And it's the one question that still exists is how much can you play Andre with Giannis because of the spacing issues? But we've seen Giannis go up to Ajax after turnovers or other plays and really counsel him and coach him through, look, next time, look here or do this, and instructing him that I think is important in the development for your young guys to not only set that tone, but it doesn't send the message of, all right, we can't do it with this guy, bring in somebody else that I trust.
With Giannis, you know, I won't say finding his jumper from mid-range, but, you know, knocking down a considerable amount of mid-range jumpers this year. How do you think that that changes or affects the Bucks' offensive attack?
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, it was always the Giannis has to start shooting threes discussion that we heard from everyone. And I kind of always felt like it was the mid-range or the baby hook that we've seen him introduce at times, even the Dirk one-legged step back that we've seen him take. But that mid-range, I don't know how you defend him. Do I expect him to shoot, you know, what, is he in the mid-50s right now? No.
40, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a 50% or around there mid-range shooter for the rest of the year, but if he can consistently start to knock that down, I think the biggest thing to look at and see what this opens up for him and the rest of the offense is that game against the Hornets where Grant Williams was taking him the entire time. And there was a sequence where Giannis came down the floor, waited for things to open up, didn't like what he saw, pulled up and hit the shot. A couple of trips later down the floor, pretty similar where he pulls up, takes it. Grant Williams closed out a little bit, but not a hard closeout. Yeah. And then about a quarter later, Giannis comes down the floor, gives the little hesitation, and Grant Williams had to close out on him, goes to the basket and gets a dunk there. So it's the things like that where right now, you know, even if he goes 5 for 5, any given night here or a couple of nights in a row, teams are still going to sag off him a little bit and say, hey, we need to see him consistently hitting that. So the more 3 for 5s, 4 for 5s that he sprinkles in there, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. You're going to have to at least close out harder. And it's not just Giannis taking the shot then. It's what that opens up near the basket or on the perimeter when that's happening.
Mm-hmm. So, and here's how I look at it, guys. I mean, so it's been a progression of skill development for Giannis. So initially it was Josh Oppenheimer. He's a local kid out of the Valley here in Los Angeles. Justin, he used to hang out at the men's gym, UCLA campus. When I first came to work for the Bucks 10 years ago, he came up to me. He's like, "Do you remember me?" And I looked at his eyes. He had these ice cold blue eyes. I was like, "Josh from UCLA men's gym, like back in 1985. He's like, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "It's the eye." So Josh was the main workout guy for Giannis. He would go to Athens and spend summers with him. And Josh's strength, his forte, is shooting. He is the only other person that Rick Brunson has allowed to work out with Jalen Brunson during his formative years of skill development. This is what Rick told me and Josh told me, just because of the respect that he has for Josh's knowledge and developing, you know, developing form and shooting and all that good stuff. So that was good for Giannis at a certain point in his career. But I thought a major change for Giannis was to pair him with Vin Baker. And for those of you, I did Vin's games when I was working with the Sonics. I've been following his career ever since. Where'd he go?
Hartford
University, yeah. out of Connecticut, where he's from. Small school, but he was like this skinny 6'9", 6'10", jump shooting, rangy, athletic, put on some bulk and muscle, but he's still got that great mid-range game. And so I thought, you know, in terms of pairing Giannis with a template, you know, somebody that's got that skill package that you'd like to see Giannis have, I thought that move worked out. And then the other move was that Drew Hanlon, who was a great skill development guy, worked with Embiid, has worked with Jason Tatum. I think that's who he started out with, Jason Tatum in St. Louis. But Drew was another guy. And you could see it, guys, when Giannis gets into that little hezzy in the mid-range. He gets dribble, hezzy, you know, in between, kind of Kobe-esque kind of shot that freezes the defender, gets him on his heels. So, man, it's important. Just in terms of who is the person that's in your ear. And right now, I think Giannis is in real good hands.
Yeah, I mean, the Vin Baker point is a good one and one that I didn't consider until it started to pop up a lot more this year, just to lean on somebody that was Vin Baker's game, as you mentioned. I mean, I remember going to the Bradley Center all those years when it was basically just Vin Baker that you were going to watch because it was the Eric Mayberry and Lee Murdoch teams that were out there for the Bucks. But that was his game. And
Lee Mayberry and Eric Murdoch. Let's get the name.
Sorry, mix it up. Yeah. Blue Edwards. I mean, we could go on and on. Ken Norman. Let's just start naming that.
Wow, Ken the Snake.
The Snake. He was a Clipper. Yep. I love Ken. Yep. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's the guidance of that. And it's not just, hey, I'm telling you how to do this, but being able to have somebody to lean on to say, this is when I went to that, or here's some things to look for, and here's what to be aware of when you're doing that.
Yeah. And I also think in regards to that, like that move, that jumper, Giannis has found a real serious sweet spot with the ball in his left hand and kind of doing the hesitation. You'll watch his feet. Like every single time he knocks down a jumper, he's locked into doing everything the same way. And he's also holding on to the ball a little longer. So like you almost know when the ball is going in for him. And now he's at a point where I feel like he's going to make every shot. Real quick stat on Giannis about the mid-range. He has like third. He has the third highest percentage in the NBA of anyone that has taken more than 50 attempts. He's right behind DeMar DeRozan and Cam Thomas. So that just shows you the level that he's playing at with that jumper.
Yeah, and he's shooting 51% on those long mid-range ones by the free throw line, which I think is 97th percentile. So it does seem like, you know, we talked about, kept searching for what was that other piece for him. If it was the three, if it was the baby hook or what, but it does seem like this is what he's kind of stumbled into. This is the thing to go to here.
Absolutely. You sound like a cleaning the glass man. Are
you
you
caught me.
I know. I love Ben. No. See, I love Ben Falk and Lisa Byington and I. We kind of have this discussion all the time. They want to use NBA.com, but I'm like, cleaning the glass filters out garbage time stamps. Yep. So it's a lot truer reflection of what's going on. I love.
Well, it depends on the story you're trying to tell. I mean, I agree, but if it's cleaning the glass, their defense is 11th. But if I go to NBA.com, it's 9th. Bucks have the 9th best defense.
I got that down right here. I was like, wow.
Bags.
No, it's all good, man. But But the final piece, we got to talk about Dame Lillard coming off of a great game against the Miami Heat, the team that was most mentioned in terms of where he was going to wind up. It's almost like he was showing up like, see what y'all could have had? Y'all didn't want to give up Tyler Hero. Okay. I don't know what the pieces involved, but we're glad to have him in Milwaukee. But so that game notwithstanding, he, you know, Giannis is not playing. He's got to carry the load. Justin, I really think, man, that Dame is showing us what the template is for this team to continue to be successful, especially offensively, is that the double-digit assist. He's had, like, yeah. I think, four out of the last five games. Yeah. He had the big numbers scoring, but 13 assists or whatever it was against Miami. I think Dame can and he's doing it willingly. It's not like he's begrudgingly, you know, not taking as many shots when Giannis is there, when Giannis is in the lineup and healthy. But I really believe that this is kind of the pattern that this team needs to follow. Look, we love for Dame to score 40, 50 on those given nights when he's got a heater going. But I just think the more he can play make and rack those assists up, the better it is for everybody.
Yeah, and the funny part is, you know, the eye test in watching these games so far this season led me to believe, man, Dame's getting to the rim a lot more this season, yeah. and he's getting into the paint. The numbers don't bear that out, though. It's actually a lower percentage of his shots this year than it was a year ago, and even the finish rate. But just that's what he's giving off, that he still has that danger. And I think, you know, one of the bigger things, too, with the importance of a player like a Damian Lillard is – his shot hasn't fallen at a high rate so far this season, but with that, he still has, seven games this season that he scored 30 or more points shooting at that rate that he is. I mean, part of that is his ability to get to the free throw line, but a big part of it, too, is he still has that burst. And Rick Carlisle, I think it was talking, or no, Charles Lee was talking about this before the Hornets game in that, he's just, you know, it's, you take the gravity out of it with the long shots that he can knock down. What makes him difficult is he's so lethal in pick and rolls and how he can navigate those screens. And especially midway through last year, when you saw instructing Brooke Lopez of here's where I like it so I can come to my left and start going downhill. But he knows how to navigate through, you know, the big trees in the forest, and he embraces that contact. He can use his body to shield that and finish at the rim. So you can't just play off and, you know, wait for him to take those shots. You can't press him for that reason either. And on the nights when the shot isn't falling, you know, as you guys know, you just got to touch the paint, like get in there and force the defense to react and find your shooters, especially when this team is starting to knock down more shots. And you got players like Gary Trent Jr. and AJ Green on the floor with you. Just get in there and start to spray the ball around to your point of the assists. That's why we've seen this offense really start to take off.
No question about it. I think the fact that Dame went from, like, I felt like he was settling in the first kind of 10 games and not really, you know, stretching the defense out, making people pay on the ball screen action, right? Because now you're just settling side to side instead of getting downhill, getting a piece of the paint like you're talking about, and then spraying out to shooters, Brooke out there on the wing and the corners. I also think that his shooting, I won't say woes, but the fact that his jumper hasn't been falling has forced him to focus and kind of get back to being that pure, not pure PG, but that PG type instead of that scoring. I mean, he's still a hell of a scorer.
Yeah.
Hell of a scoring combo guard, but you see it more. You see him navigating like you're talking about on screen and rolls, finding guys. I mean, absolutely making some sick passes off the pick and roll and just in general. And then defensively is something I don't think he gets quite enough credit for. Like the Dame that I'm used to wasn't giving the same amount of second efforts as he's been giving in these last probably 8 or 9 games. Leads the Bucks in deflections with almost 3 a game. That's showing you activity. And then sticking to hips on screen and rolls as much as he can, taking some pressure off of Brooke, not getting people out of position. I mean, I think it all factors into as a byproduct of him, his three, you know, lowest percentage of in a while, 32%. I don't know where that ranks for his career. It has to be amongst his lowest. But as a hooper, you know, when you're not knocking down, you start focusing on other stuff. And I think I think that was a big deal. Mo Williams, we had him on the podcast. He was talking about the dynamic between Kyrie and LeBron on the 2016 team and how Kyrie, how LeBron empowered Kyrie to be Kyrie. And I think that that dynamic between him and Giannis has improved so much since the beginning of the season, to where now you see these guys, it really looks like the eye test. It looks like they're on the same page. It looks like they're connected, and the Bucks are winning games as a result of it.
Yeah, I mean, and something as simple too is, you know, we finally seen somebody other than Chris Middleton throw lobs, to be honest, that for the longest time, nobody else could figure out where to place it. And we've seen Damian Lillard go to it a lot more. Right. And that, like, that's what leaves me optimistic and confident that, you know, the shot isn't falling at the level we're used to seeing from Dame right now. But I know the chatter is going to start when you look at players of that age of, well, maybe it's, this is just it. But the fact that he is still getting into the paint, into the rim at the level he is what makes me think it's one of those stretches that you go through. Like when you start to see those numbers drop off, that's when you question, okay, maybe this player is moving into a different era of his career.
Good point. Yeah, no, without question. And then finally, let's talk about some of these guys on the margins, as they say. And I don't like to say that because it, you know, marginalizes their contributions. But man, I tell you what, it's so great. We mentioned Gary Trent Jr. And Gary Trent Jr. had the back issue, sat out a couple of games after an abysmal start in the mid 20s or lower at the 3-point line. Last six games, he's averaging 13.56% overall, almost 60%. From three, at about 6 3-point attempts per game. And so I'm not sure how much the back, the pressure of not starting, playing for a contract, putting yourself where you bet on yourself, having to come out and perform at a high level. I don't know what the deal is, but he's finally playing like Gary Trent. I think that's a big key. And then Torian Prince has been solid all season long, and Delon Wright started to play better. And this is the name I want to throw out here to you guys. And Doc kind of gave us a little taste last night, but Marjon Beauchamp. I've been talking about him all year, just because the Bucks didn't extend him, they didn't pick up the option, whatever it was. He's a free agent after this year, and so a guy could be either bitter or better, as my mom used to love to say. But he continues to work hard, and then last night he finally got a little bit of a taste and some meaningful minutes. And man, 7 minutes, he was a plus one. I think he had he knocked down a three.
He had a three.
Yeah.
But he had two great passes to Bobby Portis that Bobby should have converted. You know, so yeah. I just think hearing the TNT crew talk about the lack of athletic wings on this Bucks team, I think there's, you know, between Ryan Rollins, Marjon, but there's some guys, not major names, granted, but there's some guys there that can give you serviceable minutes at that wing spot. And Marjon and the rest of the guys I talked about, man, your take on that, Justin?
He played a pretty good couple of sequences of defense too, staying connected on screens.
Major.
Yeah, and like that's one of my the pet peeves when you listen to some of the outside perspective and the conversation drifts to, well, the Bucks defense is still a disaster. Like you're clearly not watching the team because the defense has been far improved. Are they at the level of the Celtics? No, but what team is? You know, like I've heard that conversation a lot too, but it's much improved. And you know, Marjon too, to be able to do that, to not be in the rotation, everything you mentioned of the fourth year option not being picked up and still staying ready, and Doc Rivers seeing something again. It that's the other thing for me, is I get that there's a lot of narratives out there on Doc Rivers, and I think some of them have been unfair. I think he has done a tremendous job so far this season when you think about things like that, keeping this team connected, and just mentioning, you know, early in the year when they were 1-6, like, a run is coming. I can see it. I think it's going to be coming soon. None of those guys ever hung their head. Bobby Portis talked to us after the Hornets game for about 5 minutes, saying how great the vibes were. We never stopped believing in ourselves, and we're connected as a group. And that starts at the top with Doc and his staff. But one name, too, that you didn't mention is Pat Connaughton. And I think Pat Connaughton has been very good for the Bucks this season. Now, he's, you know, 10 years in the league. The athleticism is not what it once was. So that's the issue with Pat.
That's not the narrative that's out there. You look on Twitter, he's washed, needs to go.
Right.
I saw 10 points, 8 rebounds against the Miami Heat.
And, I mean, he should have had the game-winning basket against the Charlotte Hornets, too. And he hit a big three prior to that. So I think Pat Connaughton has given them some very solid play this year too. And that's another thing of, you know, he went four games without playing because you think about the depth that this team is all of a sudden built up on the wings, and he still stays ready and still comes in and contributes like he did against the Miami Heat in that game.
Chris Middleton, where does he fit into the all this dynamic? We'll end it all.
He's almost here. He's almost here.
5-on-5 just over the past few days. He's getting closer. Where does he fit in your mind when he's back and up and running and able to contribute?
So I mean, he obviously helps the offense quite a bit, especially nights like last night when in those minutes when Dame was off the floor in the second half, and you knew we got shooters on the floor, but who's going to be able to get them in the right spot and who's right. going to be able to set up the offense. So he's going to help you immensely there. It's going to change the gravity of the floor too. When you got Dame playing like this, Giannis playing like this, and Chris,
yeah.
I always kind of wondered, and I'm curious your guys' thoughts too, if we start to see, and Doc has kind of hinted at some of the things he'd like to do, but hasn't been able to yet. Do we start to see more of Chris Middleton as a small ball four and playing that way, where you know, maybe it means taking some minutes from Bobby Portis or just finding other ways to throw different looks on the floor? Not to say he's not going to be on the perimeter ever again, but do we start to see more of a shift to that, to unlock some more lineups and keep some younger, fresher legs and better perimeter defenders on the floor and have him with that chemistry that he has with Giannis, depending on obviously the teams that you're playing and those matchups? But is that something that we might start to see with his return?
Chris?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I think so. I mean, when you look, guys, injuries, you know, whatever. You can maximize a guy like Chris Middleton because he has the size, he has the IQ, and he has the strength, yeah. I think, to be viable in today's NBA as a small ball four. I would love to see Doc mix and match lineups like that because it does mean less minutes for guys and different looks, especially if, you know, when you're playing against some faster teams that get up and down a little bit. I mean, you got to take a look at it. MJ?
Well, no. I mean, the fact that to that point, so you could have Giannis, Chris, you could still play AJ, you could play Ajax, Andre Jackson Jr. So now you still got that great combination of youth, great shooting with Derry Bird, as I love to call him, but with AJ Green, the energy and the ability to push it up the floor and guard bigger wings, and Ajax put Dame out there also. I mean, that's an intriguing lineup, and I think what we're seeing from Doc now, watching the Miami game, he's thrown some. He had like Connaughton and Green, yeah. and he had one funky lineup out there on the floor that Bobby Portis and a crew out there that I hadn't seen before. DeLon Wright, I think, was a part of that unit, and they played well. I mean, I think they held the Heat to like 0-for-6 during one stretch defensively, maybe right before the first half or whenever it was. But I think Doc is kind of getting everyone used to throwing some unconventional lineups out there, and to play Chris as a small ball four along with Giannis, Dame, Ajax, AJ Green, I mean, I think is definitely worth something to look at. The people are talking about bringing him off the bench. I think Chris, as a 3-time All-Star, as a guy, veteran that he is, I think he's earned the level of respect.
Yeah.
Unless he went to Doc and said, look.
Some listeners suggested that to me too. And in the same sentence, talk about maximizing him with Giannis and like, well, so you're going to maximize him with Giannis by bringing him into the game for the first time when Giannis checks out of the game. Like how is that going to work? I mean, maybe we do see it early
when
he does come back, but yeah, I don't anticipate he's going to be the sixth man for this team. I know Derry Bird is your thing. I know, but Frank that I do Locked On Bucks with, is pretty partial to Pale Ellis. What do you think about that one?
I like that.
I like Pale Ellis. That's actually, yeah, well, I use that.
And I could even roll with when he's like locking down defensively, Derry Payton. So we could go a myriad of different ways.
Derry Payton.
Derry Payton. Derry Bird. But I love, and Doc talked about him last year, talking about AJ Green, just how he battles defensively. Yeah. And so now you got to help him out. You can't leave him out on an island when he's going against Darius Garland late stages of a Cleveland game. You got to help him out. But at the same time, he battled Jimmy Butler. He didn't gave up nothing, and then battled him down in the post, out on the perimeter, and then gave up very little. So, yeah, I mean, I think this team is slowly coming together, Justin, and you know, as is evidenced by the great record, you know, schedule not the toughest. Let's keep it real. But well, these are the games that you're supposed to fatten up on, and yep. not you know, get a bit more. You got Brooklyn, you got Boston, you got some teams coming up that are going to be way more challenging. But I think they're headed, man, in a really positive direction.
Yeah, it's a very good opportunity for them to kind of establish themselves in that conversation as that third team in the East because of that schedule. And the fact that, you know, obviously we don't know two of the games with the NBA Cup.
Yeah.
But between now and mid-January, you have two games of your next 14 on the books against teams with winning records. And that's the Cavs and the Celtics. So that schedule's still in front of you. Now, they've played tough in those games, you know, and that's the other part that gives me optimism about the defense is five of those games were against the three top offenses in the league, in the Celtics, the Cavs, and the Knicks. Right. But now the next step is, okay, you've been competitive in these, but now you got to start to win these games against those teams.
That's why it's a fantastic voyage, man. And then the way it started out, where it is now, where it's headed, man, who knows? But it's been an incredible journey so far, and only to get more intrigue, more suspense, more excitement. And that's what makes it all fun to go through a season. Justin Garcia, we appreciate you, man. We'll look for you on the Bucks Radio Network to hear from you there, and check him out on Locked On Bucks. Appreciate you, man.
Right, you too, guys. See you.
All right.
Peace.
It started with a prediction.
We'll go out there and play basketball and win.
And how many games?
Six.
It became the culture.
Chance of Bucks in six.
Being a Bucks fan means you live and breathe Bucks in six. Brandon Jennings created the prophecy. Tune into Behind the Bucks, the story of Brandon Jennings on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Available now on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
That's for the culture.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
So now, all right, let's wrap this thing up, man, by dealing with one of our favorite segments of this show, Marcus's mailbag. And listen,
mail call.
You guys want to be a part of the show? You want to be a part of Marcus's mailbag? Just tweet us your questions. We'll, you know, depending on just, you know, how
the subject matter, how you say it,
how you formulate it. The intelligence of the question, the insightfulness, the basketball analysis type of hat that you're putting on, does it impress us enough to get you involved? Well, you know, we'll see what's up. So we're gonna see what's up right now, Chris. What we got? Marcus's mailbag.
Well, let's jump into it. We got some stuff in the mailbag this week. We got four questions for you, MJ. So the first one is from T.I. Windish, who is somebody that I follow. We follow each other on Twitter. He's great follow, Bucks guy. Yeah. Has a podcast. How important is the commitment to ball movement to the Bucks finding success on the offensive end? Ball movement and success.
Well, T.I., it's everything, you know. This is something that Doc and his staff, especially Dave Yeager, who is kind of the offensive coordinator, if you're going to call Greg Buckner the defensive coordinator, Dave would be the offensive coordinator. But Doc talks about it all the time, getting the ball moving side to side, getting the defense shifted, running misdirection to get the defense out of position, then going to primary actions. So anytime especially today's NBA, anytime you're trying to generate a plethora of corner threes, of which the Bucks are number one since November 11th in corner three percentage, they're knocking down 52% of their corner threes, Chris. And so that means they're getting really good looks. And that comes from great side-to-side ball movement, great penetration off the dribble, getting a piece of the paint. And then the kick-out pass has got to be in the shot pocket of the corner jump shooter. So, T.I., great question. But ball movement, to me, Chris, is what Doc Rivers has been preaching since last year, but even more importantly at the start of camp. It's been don't let it stick. That's been a recurring theme. Don't let it stick, whether it's Dame, whether it's Giannis. I don't care who it is. Get off the daggone ball.
Yeah, and I think that Dame and Giannis in particular, your two most high usage guys, have done a wonderful job of getting off the ball. I know Dame is one of four players in the NBA averaging 25 points and 7.5 assists. Giannis is at a career high in assists. And guys are willing passers. There's not an afterthought passing thing going on as there was sort of in the earlier part of the season. And so, yes, I think that it is absolutely important to the Bucks' overall offensive success. Next question. We got a question from Sarah, who is at soccer_3_mom. We got a soccer mom in the building, MJ. Okay. How Doc every season develops some of the younger talent. Interested in how he selects and what he does as far as developing younger talent. Last year to this year, MJ, do you see any differences in Doc's approach to playing the young people on the Bucks roster?
Well, I mean, yes. And I think about just the one guy that's been the focal point of the conversation, Andre Jackson Jr. Last year, I think some felt, myself included, that he could have been more of a contributor, especially during the playoffs against the Pacer team that had a lot of young, athletic, running, dump, jumping, dunking fools, going up and down, Obi Toppin, you know, type homeboys, just, you know.
Ben Shepherd.
Ben Shepherd, Jackson, Isaiah Jackson, the types, and just a lot of guys that were really good in transition. Even Pascal Siakam, what he was doing out there. But Doc, I thought, took the approach that a lot of veteran coaches take, and that's that Andre Jackson Jr., there was a lot of uncertainty in terms of what he was going to do. It was unpredictable. And so as opposed to banking on the fact that the unpredictability would be offset by enough positive contributions, he went with Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton, you know you're not going to get all the great athleticism above the rim type stuff, but you know what you're going to get. You're going to knock down an open three. You're going to be in position on defense. He's going to be a pest when the time calls for it. Not as much as Andre Jackson Jr., but enough to be effective. So that was last year. And Doc threw down the gauntlet to these youngsters this year when he said during training camp or even before that one of the three players, Andre Jackson Jr., A.J. Green, or Marjon Beauchamp, was going to get some time this year. It was going to be counted upon. Not just get some time, but be counted upon to contribute to this team's success this year. I think Doc saw the handwriting on the wall. He knew that this team was going to need some young legs at certain points of the season to carry them through, to go along with the great veterans that the team have and Chris Middleton and Giannis and Dame. And so, and he mentioned AJ as a guy that he thought was going to really get a lot of opportunity. Now, I thought, Chris, that might have affected AJ just the increased level of pressure. He struggled out the gate shooting the basketball, but now no more struggles. He's at about 48% from the 3-point line, so he's really acquitted himself rather well. And Andre Jackson Jr., even though, you know, he's not a shooter per se, he's been respectable when given the opportunities, and I think it have made a major difference. So, yeah, I think this is a big, big difference. I just think the way the league is now, Chris, you and I have had this discussion on numerous occasions on the air and off the air, a lot more off the air. It's a different league now. And not only a different league, but once you touch on this, even the officiating back in the day where the youngsters would not get the benefit of the doubt, the veterans would get all the veteran calls. Now it's a different league, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the play against Detroit, right? Ron Holland, 19-year-old Ron Holland goes up. Giannis gets that block. You know, it's an iffy call, but the refs, you know, they're reviewing it. And, you know, this guy gets two free throws with a chance to win a game. This is a 19-year-old rookie that got stuffed by the two-time MVP, and refs are giving them the benefit. I do think that it is an issue, MJ, and it levels out the playing field, and it gives the young guys an opportunity to flourish on a more consistent kind of a fair level versus back in the day when you played in the 80s and the 90s, even the early 2000s, rookies, young players were sort of targeted by refs, and, you know, the older players were protected. But moving on.
Well, then, before we move on, Sarah mentions that she hadn't seen me in the nail salon.
I saw that. What is that all about, dog? I had to leave that out. I didn't want to say nothing.
Well, Wauwatosa, I don't see you left that out, but Wauwatosa, the North Avenue Nail Salon.
Is that where we got our pedicures?
That's where we get our pedicures, right next to the North Avenue Grill with the great
TMI pancakes. TMI, guys.
Yeah, with the great blueberry pancakes.
But that's what Sarah's talking about. And Junie, hey, shout out to Junie, my girl at North Avenue Nail Salon, does a great job hooking up my feet, pedicure off the hook. So yeah, let me throw them out there. They do a great job of getting me in, you know, fitting me in where they can get me in on those busy Saturday afternoons. So
yeah, high quality spot. Next question, and then we got one more after this, is from Brian Harmon at B-Harms, B-H-A-R-M-Z. He wants to know, what emphasis on passing and defense do you see this Bucks team having versus previously? He then asks, are Ajax and AJ Green players that you are comfortable giving lots of playoff rotation minutes? And he wants your thoughts on Giannis's mid-range shooting.
Well, goddamn, Brian Harmon.
He put in four or five questions in one.
You know, this is wow.
Brian's a loyal listener. He's somebody that always comments. He's all always right. In the comments. He gets this. He gets to put in four or five.
He's overloading the mailbag. you're giving me calluses carrying around this mailbag, young fella. But it's all good. Yeah, it's all good. Little Desinex and powder, baby powder. I'm good. What emphasis on passing and defense? We talked about the passing already and just how ball movement, Doc, has done a really good job of stressing that with this team. And I'm not sure. I got to love to see some numbers on just comparatively speaking with the Bucks and their adjusted assist star compared to past years. But you're doing a good job moving the basketball just from the eye test. Now, defensively, here's the big deal. So watching this team defensively, Brian, So one thing Greg Buckner stresses is you're cutting off like half the court. So you see the Bucks try and keep the ball out of the middle, keep it pinned to the sideline where you have that extra defender as the sideline. So there's less space to operate. Getting to the middle really compromises what Greg Buckner's trying to do defensively. And so, but not only that, there's a situation where you had a Jimmy Butler trying to post up a DeLon Wright, I believe. And Jimmy started out right on the box. By the time he caught the basketball, he was about 18, 19 feet out court toward the wing. So DeLon fought him and battled him. The point is, Brian, that the Bucks, tooth and nail, will battle you for every inch of real estate at your offensive end of the floor. They're not giving up anything in terms of allowing you to establish great position down in front of the rim, down in the restricted area. They're bump and cut. They do this great thing, Chris. They call it pound, I believe. I got to find out the proper terminology, but I think it's pound. But this is when there's a ball screen out top or a handoff or whatever it is, whatever kind of switch there is. They want the guy who is switching to work his way and wedge his way between the man and the basket and really give a hard, aggressive bump. So you just don't just switch and just kind of be in the vicinity. You're switching with the idea that you're going to cut off a rolling lane for that guy that sets that screen or gets the screen or whatever, that sets the screen.
Knock him off his route, but you got to
work your way around in front quick. So you see the Bucks do that off the ball really, really effectively. They work their way around. They give a little bit of a forearm to the chest or whatever just to bump that before he even cuts. He's not even thinking about cutting yet, but you're there so that you can dissuade him from even thinking about that. So it's a lot of little nuances in terms of an uptick in aggressiveness off the ball. And that's what makes the great defensive teams great, Chris. What you're doing off the ball, not so much on the ball is important, don't get me wrong, but it's all those little things that you're doing, the intangibles that you're executing every single possession off the ball that throws teams off their rhythm, gets them a little bit out of position, makes them a little less eager to cut hard to the basket because they know they're going to get hit. And so these are the kinds of things that this team, and again, we made this point earlier with Justin Garcia, make it again. Greg Buckner said that it's going to take a good month at least for this team to really start to grasp the defensive changes, the defensive philosophy that he's brought in. And so you're going to see some confusion initially. We saw that at the start of the season. Now this thing is really starting to get to come together and it's starting to formulate an identity, a defensive identity for this team.
Yeah, they've embraced it. They've embraced this identity. They have pride in it. There's a level of pride associated with the way the Bucks are now defending. It's almost as if they know that this is their bread and butter. They have a level of confidence on the defensive end, too, that they didn't have earlier this season. But that's great insight, MJ. Finally, we got a question from Jimmy Crackcorn. I don't care. at Jimmy Crack Corn. Thoughts on bringing Chris no longer being an everyday starter, quote, whenever he returns to bring more scoring punch to the bench unit. I feel like he obviously should be in the closing lineup, but would hate to mess with the offensive flow / defensive chemistry with the starting group.
So if you start Chris, who do you sit? Probably AJ maybe, and put Ajax as the two guard, or do you go vice versa? And, you know, but if you got Chris available and Chris is healthy and Chris is Chris, not, you know, maybe not three-time All-Star Chris, but he's 18 to 20 point a game Chris, 17 to 19 point a game Chris. I don't see the drop off or the hindrance of bringing AJ Green off the bench now. Now you got a Sam Hauser, Sam Merrill, instant offense, great shooting coming in with hard nosed defense, coming off the bench. You can kind of, you know, maybe play with him and Ajax a bit in terms of subbing them in and out for each other, however you want to do it. But I just don't. I come from the old school, Chris. I don't think you lose your spot because of injury. You know, Chris has been injured.
Wally Pipp?
Wally wasn't injured. Wally just needed a day off. He just took a day off, and and then Lou Gehrig started it in 2000 and whatever games later. You know, he never got that spot. No, Wally just wanted a day off. I think he got drunk the night before, was hungover, just kind of like asked, you know, manager, whoever it was, Nike Yankees back in those days in the 20s, you know, I need a day off. Okay. Get the rookie in there. So I can remember speaking of digressing, when I was with the Clippers coached by Jimmy Lynam, I pulled a hamstring and was out about 2 weeks, came back, and Junior Bridgman, one of the co-owners of the Bucks right now, my former teammates in Milwaukee with the Clippers then, he started in my place, Chris. And Junior, that son of Mocha, would not miss a shot. Average about 20 a game. About a 5 or 6 games, straight about 20 a game. So I came back.
Balling.
And Jimmy Lynam kept me on the bench. And Junior came up to me like, hey, I told Jimmy he needs to start you. But he's like, you know, he said, no, you're playing too good. So, you know, I've had personal experience with that. So I don't think Chris should lose his spot unless, here's a caveat, swing low, sweet caveat. Here's a caveat. Chris Middleton goes to Doc and says, look, you know, we've won 8 out of 9 or 10 out of 11 or 12 out of 13, whatever it happens to be when he does get back. Hopefully it'll be sooner than later. But like, let's not mess with the rhythm. Bring me off the bench to at least start out with, and let's see how it goes. And so if that happens, I think Doc, you know, would be in a much better position to do something like that than the. And that conversation is probably going on even as we speak, or they've had that conversation between them when he comes back, how they're going to handle that. But whatever happens, it's going to be a major, major boost to a team that's starting to finally find its way. And yes, there'll be a period of adjustment in terms of Chris finding, you know, his spot, his space within Giannis and Dame and that whole dynamic. But the way Chris Middleton plays, he's the perfect 6 seconds on the clock, swing it to the weak side after Dame or Giannis is double. Now, you know, create a play, make a shot, create a shot. Chris is good at that. So I think he'll fit in almost seamlessly.
Quick follow-up to that. How important is it, though, to work like so you if you bring Chris off the bench, you're sacrificing developing chemistry with him, Dame, and Giannis for later on in the season, right? How important is it to start to rebuild that chemistry now so that you are hitting on all cylinders later on in the season, like come playoff time or come crunch time?
When you say rebuild the chemistry, what do you say? Just start just playing them as much as possible.
Just throwing them right into the fire. Don't bring him off the bench. Like, this is our guy. He's our pro. He's earned this. Like, bring him in here. Because you got, you know, we're thinking out. We're thinking long-term here. Like, you know, okay, sure, we're on a winning streak. We're going to disrupt some short-term chemistry. But, like, what about the long-term aspect of it all?
Well, you're thinking like a coach. Look at you, Cream City Basketball. No, I mean, yeah, but that's perfect. I mean, and that's the perfect scenario of what you're trying to look at. And yeah, you want him to hit the ground running, you know, knock on wood. You don't want any kind of setback or whatever, whatever. And if he's healthy enough to play 5-on-5 and he's healthy enough to take his time and to make sure that he's as close to 100% in his own mind as possible, you need to go ahead and start developing your chemistry. And this is December. We're in December right now. So sure. Now we got December, January, February, March, April. We got about 4 or 5 months before the thing really gets real and the playoffs start. And so this is the great opportunity for Chris. It's probably going to take him 2 months to get a great rhythm. You know, so now we're talking February, you know, March after the All-Star break. And then, you know, that's about it. It's all about now that sprint to the finish line so that you prepare yourself for the playoffs. So you're absolutely right. I mean, I think you got to throw him in there, live with the results initially. And you still have – that's why I mentioned Marjon Beauchamp to Justin Garcia. You still got enough time to continue to develop A.J. Green, to continue to develop Andre Jackson Jr., Ajax, we call him around here. But also look at a Marjon Beauchamp. Look at a Ryan Rollins. I think Chris Livingston, I mean, is a guy that is super athletic and just kind of goes completely under the radar. You got some guys, you got some time to kind of look at some players that can help you in terms of spot duty. This is not major minutes, guys, but these are situational substitutions in a tough game when you guys are down or tired or injured or whatever that you throw in and they change the dynamic of the basketball game. And to his credit, Doc has, you know, won over 1,000-plus games in his career, 8th or 9th all-time. Doc understands this as well as anybody. Former player, we have great conversations all the time. He understands this, and this is how I think he will proceed. He knows it's about the big picture. It's not about what you're doing right now. It's about where you are come March, April, health-wise and chemistry-wise and execution-wise and how you're functioning as a basketball team.
Facts. Yep. Well, that's it for the mailbag, MJ.
All right, man. Well, that's it for the mailbag. That's it for here, District. This is the captain, Marcus Johnson. First mate, Chris Johnson. Thanks again to Justin Garcia. Great show, man. And I'm just really, really excited about how this team has been playing, the direction they're headed in, and this is what it's all about. They talk about the playoffs don't start until you lose a game at home. For me, the season doesn't start until you go through some adversity and see how you respond. And unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, the Bucks went through theirs right at the start. And now it's all about continuing to work your way out of this and continuing to head in a positive direction. And I really feel like this team is headed for that. Dear District, check us out next week.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.